Today for our Friday Forum webinar, we are delighted to welcome back UVA alumna Kitty Boynton. Kitty, who has a PhD and her NBCT RSCP certification and graduated from Curry in 2000 with an educational specialist degree, is a former educator turned career transition and job search coach with certifications as a life strategies, stress management, and holistic life coach. For the last 3 years, Kitty has been working on reinventing and retooling herself for a professional life after teaching, and she helps others who find themselves at a similar career crossroads. Kitty helps her clients find a career that is personally fulfilling and in alignment with their talents, aptitudes, core values, and sense of purpose in life. She offers assistance with resume writing, cover letter strategy, LinkedIn optimization, and personal and professional branding. In addition to her skills as a career and job search coach, Kitty is also the author of a book about stress management, and she offers workshops on stress management for teachers. She also offers workshops on personal branding and social media platforms for job seekers, and she is working on an online course for job seekers entitled Jumpstart Your Job Search in 10 Easy Steps. Visit her website, kitty@careermakeover.coachesconsole.com. Please join me in welcoming back Kitty Boynton with 10 things you need to consider if you are ready for a job or career change.
Hi there. I'm so happy to be here and so glad to see so many people have joined us to learn about the 10 things you need to consider if you're ready for a job or career change. So let's just go ahead and get started. One of the reasons that I decided to put together this presentation and to create an online course for job seekers is that I routinely run into people who are at a career crossroads for whatever reason. They may be bored or burnt out with their current job. Their last job may have just disappeared. That happens more and more often in this rather fragile economy. I routinely find people who are just suddenly out of work and they didn't even see it coming. Or maybe they saw it coming, but they ignored the signs and then they find themselves needing to make a change. This is also the time of year when young college graduates are beginning to look for their first job, and very often there are things that they may not have thought about that they should be considering as they go about their job search. I consider myself a career makeover coach, although I usually tell people I'm a career transition and job search coach, but you'll find out as we go through this presentation, I hope, why I think of myself more as a career makeover coach than just a career transition and job search coach. So I'm assuming that the several dozens of you who have signed on for this webinar today are at the point where you're at least thinking about the possibility of a job change or a career change, or you are at a career crossroads in your life. Otherwise, I don't know why you would be here, but I'm excited to see that over 100 people have signed on and are interested in learning what it is that you might need to know or what you might be missing out on so far if you have been job searching and your job search has gotten stuck. So you're in the right place if you can answer any of the following questions yes. Just, you don't have to answer, this isn't something you have to raise your hand for, but if you are ready to break out of your current rut and but you need help, you're in the right place. If you've been unemployed or underemployed for a while now and you're ready to make a move but you feel stuck and you're not quite sure what to do, how to get unstuck, you're in the right place. Or if you're one of the 70% of Americans who are disengaged with your current job or you're bored and hate your job if you're bored and burnt out and you feel like it's time to take charge of your career in a meaningful way, and in the same way that you would take charge of your career, you're taking charge of your life once and for all, then you're in the right place. I believe that each one of us are the architects of our lives, that we get to choose how we go about living, and that our lives are the results of the choices that we make. And that's true for each and every one of us. So when you decide to take charge of your own life and to decide that you are, in fact, the architect of your own life and your career, then that puts you in the power seat. It makes you responsible for how you go about creating that life. Now, I alluded to this just a second ago. One of the reasons that I decided to make the change that I did when I left education, the K-12 education world, where I had been for many, many years, I heard a presenter offer that in 2013, which was exactly the time that I was in the midst of my own career transition, a Gallup poll came out that offered that between 70 and 80% of the respondents had indicated that they were either totally disengaged in their current job, that is, they go through the motions, but they're not getting much out of it other than a paycheck, or they hated their job, and they were struggling to continue to do the same work because they felt stuck. They felt like they didn't have a choice. And let's face it, since the economy crashed in 2008 and 2009, jobs have been hard to come by. The competition has been as stiff as it's ever been. And if you were one of the lucky ones who managed to stay employed during that period, you would feel like you would maybe not want to crawl too far out on a limb and make a change. I believe that 2016 is going to shape up as a turning point, at least that's what I'm hoping, and that people who have been underemployed or people who have been struggling with chronic unemployment, that maybe this will be the time that they can make a change. But I want you to think in terms of what you want to do, because what I don't want for you is to find a job and find yourself in a position where you hate what you're doing. I cannot think of a more miserable way to live your life than to hate your current job. So I believe that you can find a job that you can love, find a job that's in alignment with your core values and what you really enjoy doing, but you need to know how and you need to know where to start. And that's what I want to share with you. I believe that there are at least 10, and there are probably more than 10 major considerations that are key to any successful job search or career transition. And that's what I want to share with you today. Now, how do I know what works? Well, I reinvented and retooled and made over my own career just 3 years ago. In fact, I'm coming up on April 6th of this year. I will have been a bona fide entrepreneur, owner of my own company since April of 2013. Up until then, I had considered myself a teacher and librarian, and I did that work and loved it. Every second of it, I loved it. I always said I had the best job in the building, and I still believe that I did. And then from 2008 to 2012, I was president of the Virginia Education Association. And that was a big job. It was a job that took a lot out of me. I have since learned that part of the reason I was so exhausted at the end of my term is that on the spectrum of people who enjoy and thrive on conflict, I am very, very low on that spectrum. And so needless to say, I was in a job for 4 years where I needed to be in high conflict mode, and by the time my term was up, I was pooped. So I took some time off to relax and rest and rejuvenate, and in January of 2013, I found myself thinking about what it was that I wanted to do next. because I was too young to not be doing something next. What I knew for sure was that I had to leave the K-12 world because I was not physically able to go back to the rigor of teaching all day. So I ended up reinventing myself. I got certifications as a life coach, a stress management coach. I added a holistic wellness coach certification just recently. I got training with a company that specializes in helping individuals who are in the midst of a career transition. So I became a career transition and job search coach. I own my own business, which makes me an entrepreneur. I've written an ebook that's available on Amazon on stress management. I am a speaker, a member of the National Speakers Association. I'm a workshop facilitator. I offer workshops on stress management, social media, and branding for job seekers. And I'm a regular contributor to careerilism.com, which is a free online blog or e-zine that resume experts, job search experts contribute to on a regular basis. I just had my latest article posted this morning, 4 ways to highlight yourself on LinkedIn. I'm a LinkedIn expert, and I offer individuals help with their LinkedIn profile. So I have completely retooled and reinvented myself professionally. So I know what it takes to do that. And what I also know from my own experience is that once you've decided on a focus and a direction, the rest is pretty straightforward. The problem that I find that most people have when they're in the midst of trying to decide what they want to do next is that they don't know what they want to do next. I will sit down with someone and say, okay, tell me what it is that you'd like to do. And more often than not, I get this blank look and this shrug of the shoulders, and I'll hear them say, oh, that's a really good question. I wish I knew. And so that's, I think, the number one obstacle for most people. Now, depending on where you are on the career spectrum, if you're just starting out, you know what you majored in college, you know what you think you would be interested in doing, and you are just starting out, so frankly, you're likely to take whatever job might be offered to you. And that's not a criticism. I did the same thing. I took a job that would pay off my student loan, and so, you know, I get it. I was lucky in that I landed in a position that I really enjoyed and that I was able to continue to do for many, many years. That isn't always the way it works out. As you work your way through one job after another, and that's the other thing that's a new reality for today's economic world, and that is for young people starting out, you are likely to have multiple careers, not to mention multiple jobs. And there's a difference between a job and a career. A job is just a function. A career is hopefully a pathway. So if you're young, you're looking at perhaps several renditions of your professional life over the course of the next few decades. If you're a mid-career professional, however, if you're already in your 40s and 50s and you're between jobs or you're not happy where you are and you feel like it's time to make a change, then you may be stuck because you're not quite sure what you want to do next. And that is what I see as the number one stumbling block for many of my clients and for the individuals that I work with on a pro bono basis. They just don't know. They're really clear about what they don't want to do again. They're not nearly as sure about what it is they do want. So I would recommend that it's at this particular time that you need to take stock. You need to get still. You need to go inside yourself and reflect on who you are, what you value, what you want in life and for the rest of your life. Where do you want to make your contribution? And what is it that would allow you to provide the service or provide the skill or provide the expertise that you have to offer. I really believe that once you can gain clarity around what it is that you want to do next, the rest is pretty straightforward. But that first step is the big one. And I would recommend that no matter where you are on the career spectrum, just starting out or looking maybe for the last, hopefully your last career before you decide to retire, assuming that you're in a position to be able to retire. I run into people who tell me all the time, I'll never be able to retire, and I'm sure that's a fact for a lot of people. But once you've decided what it is that you want to do and where you want to plug your unique skills and talents and aptitudes in, then you can decide on how to go about the rest of the job search. So I really highly recommend that you take time to consider what is it that you really want. And it doesn't have to be what everybody else thinks you should want. It's what you want. What do you find value in? Now, some people will be looking for jobs that offer financial security, and that's okay. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Let's face it. If you want to look for a job that will pay well so that you can put your children through college without them having to go into a mountain of debt, or if you need to be able to create your own retirement security, then financial security is what you should be looking for. For some people, however, more than financial security, they're looking for a job that will offer some sense of work-life balance. And I find this a lot with young people, and particularly young men who are wanting to be not so much an absentee father. They want to be involved in their children's lives. They want to be hands-on, and so they want work that will be fulfilling on the one end, but will also allow them to be full-time participants in their family. And it's possible that neither of those things are as important to you as finding a job or a career that allows you to use your talents, your natural aptitude, your natural gifts and talents, and allow you to use your natural learning style and work preference as opposed to having to try to fit into an environment that isn't comfortable for you. Each one of us has human needs that need to be met. You need to be respected, and that's important, both in your personal life and in your professional life. We all have a need for belonging to a group. We all have a basic need for love and a need for safety. And our physiological needs obviously need to be met. We need to be able to eat and have a roof over our head so that we're safe. But it's important that when you look for a job, that you think in terms of where you can be happy as well as where you can get paid. And I'm not sure that people pay enough attention to these aspects of work. What I will share with you is that I have a client who I worked with for quite a while to help her find exactly the job that she wanted. And we did it, and we were so happy. We did a little happy dance. On paper, it was the perfect job for her. It was a job she'd been looking for since I met her. Unfortunately, she is now stuck in this work environment where she is not being respected, and she feels excluded from the group. So guess what? We're looking again for her. She's hanging on while she looks for something that will be a better fit. On paper, it was a great job. In real life, not so much. Because she's older and most of her coworkers are much younger, and they have decided that it's good sport to play pranks on her. I mean, it's really awful what's happening to her. But she doesn't feel like she can tell anybody about it, and so we're silently looking for other work for her. What I know for sure is that it is a beautiful thing if you can manage to couple your career with a passion or a sense of purpose or your feeling of having a mission. And I know that each one of us has a sense, at least, whether we've identified our mission or not. We each have a sense that we have a mission and a purpose, and we want our careers to be in alignment. That's when we are the most happy and the most satisfied. So there are different ways for you to decide for yourself what is your best direction. While you're in this reflective mode, if you're in the midst of a transition and you're not really clear about what it is that you want to do next, I recommend some reading for you. What Colors Your Parachute is an excellent resource, along with StrengthsFinder 2.0 if you haven't taken that assessment yet. And there are other assessments like Pathway Planner that might be useful to you, or Myers-Briggs if you haven't already done that. Those are they're assessments that help you to get a sense of who you are and help you decide perhaps what your particular strengths are and where you might go to plug those strengths in. I recommend for my clients who are in transition that they do a lot of reflection. If meditation will help, I recommend that. And I'm a big fan of journaling. I think journaling and sitting down, writing out in detail what you think your ideal job would be, I think that's a great way to go about deciding what you want to do next. Do take advantage of career services that your college or university offers, like the alumni service at UVA. If you're a University of Virginia graduate and you're in the midst of a job transition, use their resources. That's what they're there for. And of course, as a career coach, I would also recommend that you find a good coach or an advisor who can help you to gain the clarity that you need and help you to avoid some of the landmines that are inevitable in any particular job search. So, that's consideration number one, and it's the big one. What is it that you want to do next, or what is it that you want to do, period, if you're just starting out? Once you've decided that, your resume is easy to write, or at least it's easier. Now, here's what I think a lot of people think about resume, and personally, I think it's the wrong approach. Many people, when they're looking for a job, they'll write out their resume, including everything they've ever done, and then they might upload it to a job board and hope that something sticks or something happens as a result of their plugging in their resume. But they haven't really thought in terms of what they want the resume to accomplish for them. If you are serious about finding a job that you're going to truly enjoy and appreciate, you need to make your resume crafted to the job that you want, not just regurgitate all the things you've ever done. And this is particularly true for mid-career professionals. You may have done several things up until now. It's not necessary to include every single thing you've ever done, particularly if you are, let's say, in your 50s. You don't want to go beyond the last 15 years of your work experience because it's not relevant in most cases. So your resume, I believe, should be crafted around what it is that you want to do next, not what you've necessarily done. Now, you use your skills, you use your experience, but you craft it in such a way that it makes you a good fit for your next job, not necessarily a picture of what you did in your last job. Does that make sense? I hope it does. The resume is really important, but it's important that you craft it in such a way that it positions you for what you want to do next. Now, a lot of people get hung up on the format of the resume. in this day and age, the format's not nearly as important as the content. The content needs to be relevant to the job for which you are applying, which means you need to make sure that you're a good match. I recently heard a recruiter say that they don't even look at a resume that doesn't have at least a 60 to 70% match to the job description. So you need to tweak, you know, have one resume that you use as sort of your template, and then you need to tweak your resume for each job description and each job that you apply for if you want to be considered. So that's what I want to say about resume. I also think that individuals who are job hunting don't appreciate the importance of a good cover letter strategy. So this is number three. What do I mean by cover letter strategy? Don't you just write, "Dear sir, please find enclosed my resume for job number such and such"? No. If you do that, if you start out with, "Dear sir or madam, please find enclosed my resume," and then you go on to regurgitate most of what's already in your resume, that cover letter never gets read. It gets tossed to the side. Nobody's ever going to read it. You might as well save the paper and save their time. Save your time, because it's a waste of time if that's the approach you take. A cover letter strategy is about making yourself stand out, to be different, to look like a different kind of candidate from the rest of the crowd, the 200 or 300 individuals who are applying for the same job you're applying for. So your cover letter strategy should be all about making yourself stand out. You start out by finding the name of the person to whom you are writing, and that should be pretty straightforward. You can find the name of an HR director or hiring manager for most companies. So find out who it is that you're writing to. Make that personal, and then start out with a story or a connection between yourself and the company, or yourself and the person, or yourself and the job that you're applying for, but make it personal. Tell a story. Don't regurgitate what's already in your resume. They look at your resume to find out what it is that you can do. So if you're not going to make your cover letter different from the rest, don't bother, because people won't read it. If you can make your cover letter a creative connection between yourself and the job or yourself and the company, then that's what you need to do, because that's the letter that will get read. Now, there's a debate about whether you need an objective statement as opposed to a summary statement. The conventional wisdom is, based on what I've been able to find, that a summary statement is more important than an objective statement. But in the template that I use, I don't even recommend that. I recommend that you condense your skill specialty into keywords that will be in compliance with the job description, the expertise that the job applicant should have, and then hard transferable skills are listed. So all of that goes into the resume, and then you make the letter more personal. Number four, your resume and your cover letter must be perfect. That means no misspellings, no grammatical errors, no punctuation errors, no spacing errors. I heard a former HR director say to a group of job seekers not so long ago that when he was in HR, his job was to eliminate as many candidates as possible, as quickly as possible, so that he could narrow down from the 200 plus applications that he received, he could narrow it down to the 10 individuals that he would recommend for a phone interview. Now, because his job was to eliminate as many candidates as possible, as quickly as possible, he didn't read as much as he just scanned. And if he saw any error, any punctuation, grammatical, spelling, or any other kind of error in the cover letter or in the resume, boom, that applicant got knocked out of the running right off the start. Didn't matter if that person might have been, in fact, the best qualified person for the job. That's not the point. You have to take the time to make sure that your cover letter and resume are both perfect. So get someone else to proofread for you, especially if you're not quite sure. Get someone to read over it for you. Get someone who's not in your industry to read over it to see if they can figure out what it is that you're trying to convey. That's a good test. And make sure that you get somebody who has a good eye for editing and spelling and punctuation. Because it's got to be perfect or else you get overlooked. Number five, you need to understand the applicant tracking system. And I could do a whole presentation just on the problems that people run into with applicant tracking system. The applicant tracking system is a software program that individuals use to sort the many, many applications that they receive. And the larger the company, the clunkier the applicant tracking system. But I've heard recruiters and hiring managers from large companies like CarMax and Bonsecours, Anthem, they all love their applicant tracking system because it takes a lot of the grunt work out of sorting through all of the applications that come through for any particular job on any particular day. So if you're on the side of the desk where you're the one deciding, you have to figure out of all of the applications that you might receive, which individuals deserve a closer look. You would, of course, love the applicant tracking system. If you are on the other side of the deal, though, and you're the one uploading your resume and your cover letter and your application hoping to get a call back, you don't love the applicant tracking system so much because it's a clunky software system that was actually created in the 80s and hasn't been recreated. It's been tweaked here and there, but it's very clunky and it doesn't pick up so much on the nuances that you as an individual might be able to offer a particular job. It's just looking for keywords. And if you don't match the keywords up to a particular point, you get kicked out of the system. This is why you can apply for job after job after job, upload all day long, and you never hear back from the company as to even a thank you for your interest. It's because chances are you got eliminated by the applicant tracking system. So you have to learn a workaround, and that's part of what a career coach can help you with, is figuring out how to work around that applicant tracking system. Number six, you have to, if you haven't already figured it out, you have to start building a more professional brand for yourself. And I talk about personal and professional because, in my view, a personal brand is how you show up in person at a networking event, for a job interview, phone interview, wherever it is that you're having an interpersonal connection, you are exhibiting and promoting your personal brand. How you dress for any particular occasion, how you express yourself, whether or not you pay attention to detail, all of that is part of your personal brand. Your professional brand is how you promote yourself through your resume, through your LinkedIn profile, and all the other social media platforms that are out there that can help you or hurt you depending upon whether or not you have understood up to this point what you need to be conveying as your personal and professional brand. Now, you may or may not have thought about it, but you already have a brand. If you haven't been thinking about how that brand might be perceived by other people, especially people who might be in a position to hire you or to recommend you to someone refer you to someone, then you need to start today taking charge of your personal and professional brand. If you don't know what it is, ask some people. Ask some of your friends. Ask a former colleague. If you had to sum up my personal brand, what would it be? How would you describe me? And be prepared, because it may not be exactly what you'd like to hear, but you want people to be honest so that they can tell you what you need to do to maybe upgrade your brand. So, number 7, social media. Now, this is also part of your branding. You need to consider how you use social media, including your LinkedIn profile. Social media includes everything: Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, Periscope, Tumblr, StumbleUpon, all of it. If you are a blogger, if you respond to blogs, if you are a commenter, if you are a retweeter, all of that, along with your LinkedIn profile. You need to be really aware and cognizant of how you appear online. So be extra careful. All of these platforms are out there, and they're all intended to help us be connected to one another. That's the good thing. You know, we become so isolated so easily that it's important for us to use these social media platforms. And we can use them to our advantage, but we have to be careful about them. So if you are in job search mode, I highly recommend that you take time to clean up anything that you think might not put you in the best light with someone who might be looking to hire you. Clean up anything on Facebook or Twitter or anywhere else, Instagram, anywhere that you don't think you look 100% presentable. You want your social media platform to be squeaky clean, because here is a basic truth. Hiring managers will not only look at your LinkedIn profile if they are interested in bringing you in for an interview and considering you for a possible job. They will look at your LinkedIn, and it needs to be stellar and it needs to be optimized. And if you need help with that, I can help. But they will also look at your Facebook page. They will look at your Twitter feed. They want to know what kind of person you are. And frankly, from a branding standpoint, I tell people all of the time that if for no other reason than to appear to be approachable and likable and someone who can be a part of their team, you need to present yourself as someone who would be likable. Likeability trumps skill and expertise every time, because individuals who are in the position of hiring people want to hire people who are going to be a good fit. That's also a critical component, so you need to be aware of that. Consideration number 9, you need to get out from behind your computer. I mean, it's good for you to spend a couple of hours a day cleaning up your social media platforms, optimizing your LinkedIn profile, applying for jobs, but there's only so much of that you can do. You need to get out of the house. You need to network with people. You need to find groups like the two groups that I volunteer for here in Richmond. I volunteer for a group called Career Prospectors. We meet every Tuesday morning, and that group is made up of any given week from 40 to 80 or 90 people who are out of work and looking. And they meet one another, and they work with one another, and they learn about job search from one another. And they refer one another to connections that they may have that don't do them any good but might be useful to one of the other members of the group. So that's an important component of any job search. Finding meetups, groups of people who have similar interest as you. Being involved in your community by volunteering or doing something that gets you out of the house and with other people. You need to network. You have a LinkedIn network, but you also need to build a strong network of people who are in a position to refer you to people who might be hiring someone like you. The fact of the matter is that 80% of today's jobs are not even posted, but they're being filled by people who were referred to someone because they knew someone. That's just a fact. And so you need to get with the program as far as getting out and presenting yourself in the best possible light. One of the things that I recommend that you do is any networking event, whether it's a coffee, informal conversation with someone who works where you think you might like to work, or if it's a group meeting, an actual networking event, you need to go dressed one step above what you think you might be interested in doing. So for some people that means business casual, but for some people it means a little more formal, depending on whether you're looking for a management type position or not. So networking is incredibly important. And number 10 may go without saying, but I think it bears repeating, that you cannot be effective and successful in your job search if you don't have and maintain a positive attitude. I won't kid you, job hunting is a hard process. It is brutal to anyone's ego. You don't have to get rejected one or two times for you to begin to feel like this is never going to work. I am never going to work again. What am I going to do? And to work your way into a real life panic mode. I want to tell you that job search is a process. In a lot of ways, it's a personal journey. You can use this time to learn a lot about yourself. You can use this time to become better at whatever it is that you think you want to do. It's a good time to upgrade your skills and your training. It's a good time to learn new skills. But what you cannot afford to do is to let yourself sink into a funk, which will exude everywhere you go. If you get depressed, which is, I'm going to tell you, I would understand it. It's not a fun process. But you have to do whatever you can to maintain a positive attitude, which means practicing positive affirmations, not letting negative self-talk defeat you. And you have to be intentional about it, and you need somebody to support you and encourage you and be there to help you when it gets tough. Maintain a positive attitude. Now here's a bonus one, because as I was doing this presentation, I realized, oh, I hadn't mentioned interviewing. So here's consideration number 11. It's a bonus. When you're in job search mode, you won't get the job unless you can interview well. So you need to learn how to interview like a pro. That means you have to make sure that you are the standout candidate. Now, I will share with you that when I was president of the Virginia Education Association, I probably sat in on 24 or more interviews. And I was responsible, in fact, for helping to interview the executive director when we found ourselves in the midst of a transition. And it was a very interesting process. We had dozens of individuals who applied. Our HR director, who was an expert in the process, narrowed it down to 10 people that she actually called. She narrowed the 10 down to 4 individuals that we brought in for face-to-face interviews. The person who got the job was the person who did his research about who we were, what our problems were, and he came in offering some solutions. We had another individual who came in that on paper was perfect in every way. He had the experience, he had the skills, he was far more experienced, in fact, than the individual we eventually hired. His downfall was that he was all about himself. He shared with us that part of the reason he was interested in the job was that it would bring him closer to his parents. We didn't care about that. That was about him. That was not about us. As we asked him questions about how he might approach certain issues or challenges that we were facing, it became very clear that he had not done his homework. He had not bothered to research what was going on in Virginia. He was from another state. And while he was probably really good at what he was doing in his other state, in order to get the job he was interviewing for, he needed to know more about Virginia. So guess what? The less experienced person got the job because he had gone to the trouble of actually finding out and being able to articulate what he would do to help us solve some of our problems and face some of our challenges. So as an interviewer, the interviewer is looking for someone who's done their homework. And you can stand out if you've done that. Now, what I know is that I've thrown a lot of information at you, and I know it's a lot to juggle. I didn't say it was easy. In fact, I've already said this is a hard process. And in the last 5 years, job searching has become a totally different proposition from what it was before that. You have the applicant tracking system that is not your friend. You have the need to do research about a variety of different companies that you might be interested in. You need to make sure that you're able to tweak your resume for every job that you are interested in. You need to prep for the interview. And even if you get the offer, you have to be prepared to negotiate your salary and decide whether it's the right job for you. And then there's always the ultimate rejection that comes with a lot of the job search, and it's hard on you. I tell people that they need to practice patience during this process, patience with themselves, patience with the process, patience overall. And so I found this quote that says, patience is not the ability to wait, but the ability to wait. The ability to keep a good attitude while waiting. It also requires persistence. You have to decide that you can't give up. And that if you have set your sights on something that you think would really be the best possible job for you, then persist in going for it and don't let yourself panic. Panic does not attract jobs, it repels jobs. And the reason all of this is important is that it's your life. You need to decide what it is that you want to do with it. And your career is a big part of your life. It's not the only part. And I tell people all the time, don't mistake your job for who you are. That's something that, especially in our culture, in our society, we often get messed up with. People, how often do you meet someone brand new, and the first or second question you get asked is, so what do you do? Because people want to be able to put you in a box. If you're an IT guy, that puts you in one kind of a box. If you're a secretary, it puts you in another kind of a box. Teacher, librarian, career coach, all of those put you in a particular box. You don't have to be in a box. Who you are is not always what you do. So don't get confused about that. A job is something you do in order to help pay the bills. A career is something you do where not only do you get paid for it so you can pay the bills, but it's something you enjoy and something you feel that you can contribute in a meaningful way to. So, those are the main considerations that I believe every job seeker should keep in mind as they go about finding their next great opportunity. So at this point, if anybody has any questions, Liz or Marianne, whichever one of you was taking notes of the questions, I'll be happy to try to answer questions that might have come through. I was not watching the chat box, so I don't know whether or not folks had questions, but I'll be happy at this point to answer any questions that individuals might have. And for those of you who are still on, if you're interested in contacting me at my website, you please do, but know that my actual URL is kittyat@careermakeover.coachesconsole.com, not the little symbol there. So kittyat@careermakeover.coachesconsole.com. Okay?
So, thank you, Kitty. This was fantastic. I'm going to take a moment just to thank everybody for being with us today, and of course to thank Kitty for sharing her expertise with us. We do have some questions coming in, so we'll take just a moment for that. I'd like to invite everyone to come back and join us again in 2 weeks on March 18th. Steve Ramachy is going to present Use Your Business Skills to Succeed in Data Analytics. So we hope you'll come back and be with us again then. For anyone who might have to leave as we're approaching 1 o'clock, thank you so much for coming today. One of the questions that came in was from someone who says she left a career in the financial services industry to raise her children before LinkedIn and has never had a profile. Mm. And so she was wondering if she needs one to re-enter the workforce. And I'll just mention that we've had this wonderful networking response in the chat box. So about 7 or 8 of our fellow participants have shared their thoughts on that too. So I'll start with that question, Kitty, for you to add to that. But I wanted to thank all of our audience members for sharing insight as well.
Yeah, so the answer is yes. You must have, it's not even an option. In today's world, you must have a LinkedIn profile. Partly because when anyone is Googling you, if you put in your name, your resume for a particular job, if the hiring manager or the HR director or whoever it is that receives your resume, that they're going to start looking for corroborating information about you, and the first place they'll want to go is LinkedIn. Google has started putting people who have optimized LinkedIn profiles at the top of the search. If someone puts in your name in a Google search, your LinkedIn profile will be the first thing that pops up. I have heard recruiters and HR directors say that if you don't have a LinkedIn profile, if they can't find you online, that's a red flag for them. It feels like, whether it's true or not, that you're hiding in some way. So it's not an option. You have to have a LinkedIn profile. And I have offered a workshop on how to optimize your LinkedIn profile for the UVA Alumni Services Center. So you could find that probably archived somewhere. Watch it, follow the directions, and it'll help you to at least build the beginning of your LinkedIn profile. Okay? So, yes, you have to have one, whether you
want
to or not.
Thank you, Kitty. So the next question is, how do you feel about the T letter that many people are advocating as the format for the cover letter?
I don't know, because I don't know that format. T, but I don't know. I've not heard of that, so that's something I guess I'll need to do some research on. Is it a format for a cover letter?
I'm not familiar with it either, but I know that perhaps they are referring to the pain letter.
Oh, okay. That I have heard of, the pain letter, where you are offering how you would solve a pain or solve a problem. So if that's what they're talking about, then that's a good approach. The real purpose of the cover letter, though, is whether you, I don't, the purpose of a cover letter is to help you create a connection between yourself and the company or the organization to which you're applying. So that's the main thing, is not to be the traditional please find enclosed my resume, which then is a regurgitation. You know, they usually, people will include bullet points that they're already in the resume. So that was the point I was trying to make about the cover letter, but I'm not familiar with the T format, so I can't comment on it. Sorry.
Thank you. And then someone has asked if you can go into a bit more detail on the difference between a summary statement and an objective statement, and which you would recommend.
Well, like I said, I've heard back and forth about both. The summary statement is more of two or three sentences that summarize the overall experience that you've had. The objective statement is more about two or three sentences that state why it is that you're applying for that particular job. I have heard back and forth about both. I think the general consensus is that a summary statement is preferred over an objective statement. For anybody who's not clear about that, though, there are numerous resources online, many of them contradictory. And this is the problem, you see. I tell people all the time when they bring me their resume, I have an opinion. Everybody has an opinion. Anybody who's ever looked at a resume has an opinion about what's right and what's wrong. At the end of the day, there's no one right answer. There's no one perfect format. The purpose of the resume is to illustrate why you are the best fit for the job for which you are applying. So a summary statement might be a good way to start out your resume, and then you build on that with your past experiences and your transferable skills. But at the end of the day, the only reason you even use a resume is to get your foot in the door for the interview. So I don't know that it even matters that much anymore. What format you use is just how do you get invited for an interview.
Thank you. And then another question, what do you hear from recruiters about those without an online presence other than LinkedIn? And can that be seen negatively as well?
It can be seen negatively as well, although it's not as critical. What I would, now recruiters do say that if they can't find you anywhere else, you know, that's also something of a red flag. Because here's the problem. It may indicate that you're not interested in social media. And given that social media has become such a part of our everyday functioning, it could be a sign that you're not interested in keeping up with the times. That's the concern, if you're not fully engaged in some of the social platforms. It could be a sign of that you're an older worker, that you haven't kept up with technology, that you're really not interested in being part of the social platform world. And so that can be a deterrent, and I've heard recruiters actually say that. They want to be able to find you. They want to be able to figure out from your Facebook and from your Twitter feed, you know, what kind of person you are, what it is that you're interested in. And that can be a two-edged sword, too. They can find out, if you're not particularly careful, they can find out what your political leanings are. They can determine pretty quickly whether you're a hothead, if you tweet things that you've thought of in the moment but might not want to tweet after you've thought about it a little bit. So you have to be careful, but you do need to participate, because participating indicates that you're keeping up with the times. And companies want people who are willing to learn new things and are able to stay up to date on new developments. And so that's why I think you need to be aware. The other thing is that you may not be aware of it, but you can use Facebook and Twitter to help you find your next job. I've got lots of colleagues that I've worked with through Career Prospectors who have found their job by using Twitter and Facebook. And I have a book called Social Media for Job Seekers for Dummies. So, I mean, there is a whole job search strategy that can be built around Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Now, LinkedIn is, that's what I say about LinkedIn. LinkedIn is where people will go to look to find your Sunday school best, you know, the things that you want to highlight about yourself as a professional. Facebook is for family, friends, and fun, but you need to be careful. And Twitter is timely because you tweet in the moment. It's quick, it's easy. You can, you know, retweet easily if you see something that you like. And Twitter is going more and more to visual content as well as short messages that may not be that short in the near future. I've heard that Twitter is getting ready to change their length requirement. But all of that being said, you can't ignore the necessary social media platforms that are part of the job search process.
Thank you. And how would you recommend to someone with a disability to overcome the barriers that get raised because of it?
Well, now there's a law against people being discriminated against because of a disability. So you have to make sure that the company is not discriminating solely because of a particular disability. That's illegal. So I would recommend that, well, first of all, you don't, depending on the situation, I would need to talk more to the individual to find out what the specifics are. So I probably shouldn't get too broad in my response to that question, but my initial response is that there are legalities around the fact that people are not to be discriminated against based on a physical disability. So if that's happening, you might need to seek out some legal advice. And I'm not in a position to offer legal advice.
Okay, thank you. And do you think there's an mm-hmm. age cutoff for a dramatic career change?
I don't, because I was 60 when I made mine. And I still, you know, in my opinion, 60 is now the new 40. At least that's how I'm going to approach it. And so I made my transition from lifetime career educator to career transition and job search coach, which is a pretty dramatic turn. Starting your own business at the age of 60 is not something that, you know, sissies would want to take on, but I'm not a sissy. And I felt like I needed to do something meaningful, and this is a great way for me to help individuals who find themselves at a similar crossroads. So, no, I don't think there's a cutoff. I've got clients who are 66 and 67. Who are in the midst of career transition. In some cases, they've been forced to retire from their current position, and they are not ready to retire. You know, 66, 67, still young in today's world. It maybe wasn't always that way, but in today's world, we're still looking at, I'm looking at another, I think, 30 or 40 years, I hope, of productive contributions. Or maybe I'll stop by the time I'm 90. But you know, I'm looking forward to a long career that maybe will match the 37-year career that I left behind. So, in my estimation, no. Now that means that you have to pick something you're really going to enjoy, something you really feel like you're making a difference in. So you maybe have to be careful what you decide to do next. But age cutoff, I don't think so. I mean, it's a personal thing, but I mean, certainly if I had let age be a consideration, I would have stopped at age 60, and I'm still going strong. It's been 3 years.
Great, great. And someone asked if you could repeat your email address.
Well, my email is kittyboitnott@gmail.com. That's the easiest way probably to get to me, kittyboitnott@gmail.com. My website is kitty, K-I-T-T-Y, at A-T, careermakeover.coachesconsole.com.
Thank you. Okay, I just typed it into the chat box. So yes. That was actually our last question. So, yes, Kitty,
wonderful.
Thank you so much. This was a wonderful webinar. We really appreciate your being with us again. And to all of our audience members, thank you so much for coming and for helping one another out. We really enjoy seeing that interaction in the chat room. So that was wonderful. We hope everyone will join us again on March 18th. And in the meantime, we hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Thank you so much. And Kitty, if you can stay with us for just a moment. Great. Thank
sure.
you.
Mm-hmm.